Blog Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Autism and Scouting Radio. Welcome to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the Autism and Asperger's Scouting communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism and Scouting or Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, support services, and radio broadcasting. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to Autism and Scouting Radio. My name is John Krejcha, and I'll be your host today. Autism and Scouting Radio is part of the Autism and Scouting program, which is a featured program of Autism Empowerment, which is an educational and charitable nonprofit 501c3 public charity serving those on the autism community. To get more information about Autism Empowerment and the Autism and Scouting program, after the broadcast, please visit us at www.autismempowerment.org or join us on Facebook and Twitter. If you are interested in upcoming broadcasts or listening to any of the previous broadcasts in archive or podcast, we have that information available on the website as well. Today we have an incredible guest with us, Tony May. He first joined Boy Scouts in 1959 and achieved his Eagle Scout rank in 1963 while serving in Saudi Arabia. And someday we'll get into that story because it's a very fascinating story in and of itself. In 1965, he helped found an explorer post in Italy, which was wonderful to spread that scouting around the world, which we try to focus on here at Autism and Scouting. From between 1972 to the present, Tony held a wide range of volunteer positions with the Boy Scouts of America, some of which include an assistant den leader, Weeblow's den leader, assistant cub master, assistant scout master, unit commissioner, roundtable commissioner, district commissioner, commissioner, college instructor. He's been on Woodbadge staff as well as Woodbadge director. Currently, Tony is a member at large of the National Council. He's also the chair of the National Scouts for Special Needs and Disabilities, capital A and abilities there, and part of the Youth Development Team, National College of Commissioners Training Team, trainer for special needs at the Philmont Training Center, and also the webmaster for Working with Scouts with Disabilities. And that website is www.wwswd.org. You can find that website also on our blog tab under resources. His whole life has been dedicated to the realm of scouting. I guess we spend the next 20 minutes talking about all of the awards he's won. So just to know, he's won a ton of awards and a lot of accomplishments. With that being said, as an incredible they are very impressive and well deserved. Welcome, Tony.
Oh, hi there, John.
How you doing today?
I didn't go through all of my bio.
It was pretty impressive, but we just wanted to let people know out there what an incredible career that you've had in scouting. So,
oh, thank you.
I know I've missed some of the things, but those to me kind of like popped out as big highlights, especially all of the training that you've done. One of the questions is why special needs? You spent 40 years volunteering with the Boy Scouts of America in the various positions. A lot of people have passions. A lot of people focus on different areas. You know, some people focus, the big thing now is STEM, the science and technology. But a lot of people don't really focus on the special needs aspect of scouting. Can you kind of tell our listeners why special needs?
Well, I originally, back in 72 and through most of the 70s, I really wasn't focused on that. On February 17th, 1982, my second son was born and was immediately diagnosed as having Down syndrome. That sort of snowballed in terms of my involvement and interest in working to support those who have disabilities. As many of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, there isn't a lot of information readily available for those in scouting to work with individuals who have special needs, as they say now, or disabilities. And I sort of took it upon myself as a bit of a challenge to do what I could in my own small way to change that. I remember going when I went to Woodbadge as a participant, part of my ticket was to make a presentation to the roundtable at our council about special needs. I was totally blown away by the fact that this was supposed to be a breakout session, but I basically had the entire roundtable attendance at my session, which that said, you know, tons.
Right.
People were looking for answers. I subsequently went to the Philmont Training Center to the seminar on working with Scouts with Disabilities. Funny that name pops up. And there are about 20 of us there, all like-minded, saying, where's all this information? Who does anyone know what's out there? And our facilitator showed us what was there, and there were a few things which we said, wow, why doesn't anyone else know about this? That basically gave birth to the website that you mentioned, John, back in 98. And the full intent of that was just get as much information out there as we can. Still looking to get more on that site. I'm sort of a staff of one on putting it together, so that's still a work in progress.
That's the Working with Scouts with Disabilities. Again,
yes.
www.wswsd.org. Just want to give it another plug.
Thank you.
It's a fabulous site. If anyone's not been to it, definitely highly, highly recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about your son. I'm assuming that your son then went into Scouts, and that was kind of where his that's kind of your passion then?
Yes.
Change.
Well, both of my sons were in Scouts. I didn't mention the fact that I think I mentioned my older son was diagnosed with ADHD, but at a point where it really didn't make any difference in his scouting career because he had already aged out at that point.
Mm-hmm.
My younger son, the one born in 1982, he went through the Cub Scout program, bridged into a scout troop when he was 12. And he has been registered with that troop ever since, so that's almost 18 years now. Granted, in the last 10, he hasn't been particularly active, but he still periodically says he wants to get his eagle. Right now he stands at life with 18 merit badges, so he's 3 eagle requireds and an eagle project left to do. Time will tell.
That's phenomenal.
So,
I think... I was kind of the same boat back in 2010, coming back from summer camp, just amazed at watching some of the counselors in the way they interact with some of the boys, and then I came back and looked for information specifically about autism and scouting, and just couldn't hardly find anything at all. I guess the issue is getting that training out to the leaders. Now you're a member of the National BSA Committee and chair for the Scouts with Special Needs or Disabilities. Can you talk to us a little bit about your role there and your function there?
Okay. I started actually in that as a member of the committee, and then I was asked to chair it last summer. I think I'll cut right to the chase on that one. The vision of that committee, and this is driving its mission, obviously, is we want to see the underserved population of those who have special needs and disabilities served by scouting, and in fact, by scouters who are knowledgeable and understand how to work with him as opposed to anyone else.
Right.
An editorial comment there, it's not all that different from the way you work with any youth in the program.
I totally agree.
But you do need to be aware of certain certain triggers if you want to avoid certain behaviors. I think most scouters truly want to see the youth in their program get the most out of it. And, you know, probably some of the most rewarding experiences I've had in scouting are when I've seen a youth who has a special need or disability actually succeed at something that everyone else was saying, oh, no, he can't do that. Or, oh, he'll never make that rank. Surprise. It does happen. It is doable, but you've got to help. You've got to facilitate. And that's part of where the committee is going. You know, it's a lofty vision, but, John, you already brought up, if you will, one of the very critical keys to getting there. You've got to get the word out. You've got to get the training materials available to as many people as possible. You need to get the documents available to as many people as possible. I mean, there are two key documents that BSA has put together. One is called the Guide to Working with Scouts with Disabilities, and the other one is called, Working with Youth with Disabilities Manual. Both are excellent documents. They're both available online on the scouting.org site. But I have to say, I dare you to try to find them.
Well, what I'll
you're
do
better,
is I'll make
you're
sure,
better off doing a Google search.
I'll make sure that they're available on our site, for sure.
Well, they are directly available on my site.
Oh, excellent.
Going in. And part of what the committee is doing is actually, we've already revised the guide. That document is like 8 pages long. It is worth its weight many times over in gold because it has so many nuggets in it of knowledge and information. Every scouter should have that document.
Right.
And that's something we're working on trying to get. They're revising the Scoutmaster's handbook. I continue to push the idea that guide needs to be fully incorporated into that manual, or rather into the Scoutmaster handbook.
I completely agree with you. Actually, I have a copy of that right here on my desk, and I completely agree because you go through that, and there's nothing that really talks about working with kids with different abilities. We like to say there's just different abilities, and also I like how you put on your website. You spell disabilities with a small D and a capital A for ability. And I think that's the key is to make sure that the scouts and the leaders know to emphasize the abilities that the scouts have and not just the disabilities that they have.
Precisely.
Now, there's on the scouting.org website, there's things like safe swim, safety afloat, even, you know, like rappelling safety. Do you ever foresee something as far as an online training where scouters can go, scout leaders can go and just take like an online course and where it talks about...
You're right on target.
Okay.
You read my mind. That was
you
one of the
about
first...
That a little bit?
Okay. That was one of the first tasks that the committee took on. We have developed the initial module of an e-learning course for working with scouts with disabilities. Now, the process of getting this officially onto the scouting.org website and into My Scouting so that you can go in there and do it online, there's an old saying in government, you know, decisions are made with glacial rapidity. That holds true even in the scouting organization, and Understandably so. I mean, there are certain, they need to make sure that all their policies are properly reflected. They mm-hmm. they like to have, you know, a common format. And we're well along or down the road on that, and I fully expect to have that e-learning piece in place for hopefully by next May.
Wow, that's awesome.
We already have a PowerPoint presentation, which is the heart of that, which is, I mean, I'm planning on putting that on my website just to get, you know, get it some early exposure. The actual presentation is, it lends itself toward, that's an overview, and then our next step is to go into like five modules, one specific to physical disabilities, and then one specific, for example, to the, how did you term that, the invisible disabilities?
Oh, absolutely, because a lot of times autism and ADHD and a lot of these types of disabilities are considered invisible because, you know, oftentimes children with autism and Asperger's are, you know, there's no physical outward appearance until you actually start interacting with them, and you can actually see the differences. And it's how
precisely.
How do you train the people then to work with those types of disabilities when a lot of times it's hard for, you know, if you see someone who is in a wheelchair, it'd be easy to understand the obstacles that they overcome, or if they're blind,
right,
or deaf, you know, those are some kind of, I don't want to say easy disabilities to work around, but I mean workable disabilities that you can see, or, you know, see very quickly.
You can't miss them.
Right, can't miss them, exactly. where things like autism and ADHD, you don't see that a lot of times until you're actually up there,
right,
working with the individual scout. How do you deal, or how do you perceive that type of training? Do you have any
Okay. Well, despite the way what you explained there, it isn't a simple fix.
Right.
I look upon this as a matter of, if you will, providing knowledge to those who are we working with individuals who have these types of disabilities. The key to success here is parental involvement with the unit. Because, I mean, as you described it, a scoutmaster, if a boy comes into a troop and the scoutmaster looks at him and cannot visibly see a disability, if something happens that's manifesting the disability in a behavior, the scoutmaster, if he doesn't know about the background, he's going to say, oh, this is a behavior issue, and I'll just treat it like anything else, whereas
right,
there may be more behind it. Hence, if the parents share the information with the leaders so they know what to expect, or better yet, what to avoid doing, because, you know, avoid those triggers that cause
absolutely
a meltdown.
because the biggest thing that we find when we work with scouts, because our unit, we have a special needs unit, Cub Scout Pack 2. It's about 95% with boys either somewhere on the autism spectrum. And we have them fill out a sensory form when they come in, and we also have each parent with each child at all times, no matter if it's a tiger through Weeblos 2. But what we find is a lot of scouts don't especially scout leaders, don't know the difference between what a behavioral issue is versus a sensory issue. Because a
exactly
lot of times a sensory issue may manifest itself like a behavioral issue, but if you treat it as a behavioral issue, it could even cause worse problems.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Look, you know, you sort of gave rise to a thought that hits me. I mentioned the parents need... I mean, I am an advocate of an inclusive units as opposed to units that are specifically for special needs, although the latter is appropriate under certain circumstances.
Right.
And it can be very successful. But in an inclusive unit, you know, say if you have 30 boys in a scout troop and, let's see, with a troop that big, you probably have five or six who have ADHD. You may have equally as many who have autism spectrum disabilities. The key becomes the parents need to inform the leaders. But you know something? Here's the key. Another key. The peers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get into privacy issues. But sometimes, you know, a youth who has ADHD or ASD may very well, I mean, he wants to be accepted as one of the guys. And if, in fact, the disability may be preventing that because they don't know how to react when he does X, Y, or Z,
right,
alerting them to, you know, guys, you know, Johnny just can't handle large crowds. So if you're getting into a situation like that, you need to be aware of it so you can help him just, you know, keep cool. And you know what? In most troops that I've seen where they are aware of the scouts' challenges, the best support that the youth gets are from the youth themselves.
I totally agree with you. I've seen that myself.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it doesn't hurt if the adult leaders do, because
I think that's
clearly
a lot of times where the breakdown comes is you see the acceptance a lot of times on the youth side, but then you have the adults that don't know how to work with it, and
right,
because they're used to the discipline versus, oh, let's take care of the sensory issue and that will take care of the issue.
Right.
And a lot of times just a simple thing is a 5-minute break in a quiet room, and then it's obviously for trying to work that type of safety issue within the scouting program, as far as
mm-hmm.
making sure the scout's safe and all of that. And obviously that's going to be key for anything, is always to follow guides to safe, whatever scouting organization, follow their guides to safe scouting. I mean, I think that's first, most, and paramount for the safety of everyone.
Oh, absolutely.
And there was, we talked about a little bit about the behavioral versus a sensory. I too believe in inclusive units versus necessarily separate units, but in our case, it just kind of worked out where it just really needed to have its own Cub Scout unit. But we're working right now with a Boy Scout troop that's going to have a sensory-friendly patrols that are, but within a mainstream troop.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll still be doing mainstream type of activities, but then in the breakout sessions, you would have more of a sensory-friendly patrol meetings and things like that. And where you still have those types of supports in place versus, but then you also have the support of the entire unit as well. And do you see, what type of modeling, do you have any vision on where, as far as guides to providing sensory sensory support for units, in, you know, like, for example, you know, there's the 10 essentials in scouting, what you bring on every hike or whatnot. Do you see, like, 10 essentials for every single unit to help you to become more sensory friendly, or to become more friendly to scouts with any type of disability?
Well, you know, we haven't really enumerated that, but when you get down to it, I'll go back to some of the training courses that we're putting together. For example, ones for the College of Commissioner Science. It's a matter of identifying the various characteristics and then various strategies for dealing with specific behaviors or reactions or responses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I really would love it if we could say there are 10 things specific, you follow these and you'll be successful.
Right.
The challenge really is that, well, we've got at least 9 or 10 specific types of disabilities out there, and each one is different. And, oh, by the way, they are not unique. You can have 2, 3, or more of those disabilities all with, at the same time. You know, good luck categorizing. That's why they have an individualized education plan or an individualized transition plan or an individualized scouting achievement plan. I know that's sort of a cop-out, but when you get down to the individual scout, you need to address their individual needs.
No, that makes a lot of sense, because even with scouts with autism, Dr. Shore, a famous author, once coined the phrase, if you meet one scout if you meet one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. And that's because the traits are so different from one person to the next. And both of my sons are on the autism spectrum, and they can be in some ways more different than anything. I mean, one person, our youngest, will eat anything. Our oldest has huge food challenges. There's just a lot of challenges even within autism itself as far as finding that. We have about 3 minutes left. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about as far as working with special kids with special needs or disabilities that we haven't kind of covered at this point? There's a lot of stuff. There's other stuff I want to cover, but I'm kind of specifically not covering that because what I'm talking about is your specific work with working with scouts with disabilities and that website. And also the 2013 Disability Awareness Challenge, because I'm going to have Tony back at least two more times, probably a bunch more times, talking about a lot of different other subjects. But is there anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, you know, sort of keying off of some of what we've said already and maybe pointing toward that Jamboree Disability Awareness Challenge discussion, that's another factor which you don't have to go to a jamboree to get that disability awareness challenge. Something like that can be held, in a troop meeting, in a PAC meeting, at a scout-o-rama, or at a council or a regional, mini jamboree or something like that. The key being, you allow all the participants to have an experience where they can walk in the shoes of someone who has a specific disability. Again, we're only looking at unique disability as opposed to the comorbidity issue. That's something which I've been involved with since 2001, and every time I'm involved with putting one of these on at any given level, it's amazing the reaction that you get from the participants. Many of them, they walk onto the site, saying, "Oh yeah, this is just a game we're playing here." And when they're done, having gone through 4, 5, 6, or 17 different activities, it's amazing how you'll have something as profound as, "I will never look at a person with a disability different the way I used to."
Well, that's phenomenal. Coming away with that type of attitude, that's phenomenal,
Oh, it is. Or, just something as simple as, "Wow, I didn't realize how hard this was. And this guy's got someone who has this situation has to live this every day of their lives."
Right.
Wow. And that's one of the things, I know I've spoken to you about it, and I've been getting input. Unfortunately, we have not actually addressed either ADHD or autism spectrum in the event at the Jamboree yet. We will be doing that in 2013.
That's phenomenal. We definitely will have you back to talk about that specifically. We have about 10 seconds left. I just want to, again, thank you so much, Tony, and I want to make sure that we listeners know that Tony will be back, and we'll be talking to him on a variety of subjects. So Again, thank you, Tony, and have a wonderful rest of the day.
Well, thank you.